welcome to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew, and this is Stepping Out. The stories you're about to hear are real. This is a 12-step meeting on the air. So in case you ever wondered what was going on inside of those rooms, you're going to find out right now. Just kick back, grab a cup of coffee, and listen in. Tonight, we're dealing with the addiction to cocaine. And hey, by the way, if you or someone you know is having a problem with alcohol or drugs, help is available. Call 1-800-ALCOHOL. That's 1-800-252-6465. A couple of questions we pulled off of the Cocaine Anonymous website. I'm just going to throw them out there to the audience before I bring up our speaker. Have you ever used more cocaine than you planned? Has the use of cocaine interfered with your job? Do you feel depressed, guilty, or remorseful after you use cocaine? Have you ever wished you'd never taken that first line hit or injection of cocaine? Have you experienced chest pains or rapid or irregular heartbeats when using coke? John, what do you say, buddy? What do you think?
All of the above.
All of the above. I see you nodding in the background, so yeah. What was it like for you? What was it like as an active coke addict? What was it like, you know, coming into recovery, and what's your life like now?
Okay, well, we start with the active portion.
Sure.
Beginning... probably smoked pot for 20 years, and that's where it started, the schoolyard, smoking pot with my friends.
Sure.
Reefer, moving reefer.
Selling it?
Selling it to get some for my head, you know, that yeah. sort of thing. The neighborhood, having that self-centeredness where I wanted everything to revolve around me, being the guy that everyone saw, went to the house, throwing a lot of parties.
How old were you at the time?
15, yeah. 16, 17.
Okay.
Really, even 18, 19. My emotional growth stopped. Mm-hmm. Well into my teens and didn't reemerge till well into my 30s.
Mm-hmm.
I was a sporadic cocaine user in the beginning and really supplemented it. For me, it was always drink a fifth of booze a day, smoke a lot of weed, and do something else.
Okay.
It varied. It would be pills for a while. Then I'd be like, oh, I can't move. These pills are too much. I'd put down the pills. Then it was tripping for a while, and then I was tripping all the time.
Psychedelics?
LSD. Yeah. Yeah, for many days. And I'd be like, oh, my God, I can't do this anymore. I better put this down. I put that down. Then, you know, when coke became popular in the, say, late 70s, early 80s, I dabbled with it here and there. But I was so used to smoking, so I really got more involved with coke when crack came out.
Okay. So you fancied yourself more of a pot smoker up until that point. You knew about coke. You had a little, you danced with it a little bit, but you didn't fall in love with it till you came down to
exactly. The crack was the smoking. It was more my thing, and I smoked it regularly.
Yeah.
I mixed it with angel dust. We used to call it space base.
Sure.
And I smoked angel dust religiously for 5-6 years from about age 28 to 34, where I went through a series of different incidents.
Give us
come later.
Give us a little bit of a description of what that high is like for the uninitiated.
I take one poke. I'd be in euphoria. I'd be hallucinating. Everything seemed unreal. I thought I was on top of the world. I thought I could run through a building. I felt especially strong. I got especially sarcastic. I was arrogant. All the self-centeredness came out.
Bulletproof.
Felt that way, yeah, to some extent. And some of the places I was going, I must have thought I was bulletproof because most communities like that I won't fly over now. But even though with the change in New York, it's like, you know, neighborhoods are better than they were
in
the late 80s, mid 80s.
Absolutely right.
But I really gravitated more to the crack. And I remember someone showing me crack and saying, wow, there's this stuff crack. And I go, what is
it? What year was that?
Probably 1985.
85. That's about when the yeah. epidemic hit,
and
right?
That's when I smoked it. And while I wasn't as much as day in and day out with it, I must have smoked it, you know, 150 times in a three-year period. And, you know, supplemented with my daily dust use. You know, if I put down everything and I said, now I'm straight. But for me, straight was smoking like 8-9 joints a day and drinking a fifth and, you know, always blacking out. I can rarely remember, oh, let me go to bed now. It was usually waking up on the floor in my room or whatever.
Well, paint the picture for us, your life at the time regarding your family, your work. Did you hold down a job? Where was the rest of your life in all of this?
Anytime I had an apartment, it was like a extension of college life. Where I just paid my rent barely, had friends coming in and out, keg parties, NCAA basketball, whatever it might be, and I just never grew emotionally. When I was evicted, my parents would be, you know, feel like I was going to change, and they'd take me back, and then I'd live in their basement. Rarely grew emotionally. Must have been in and out of 5-6 apartments during that stretch of time. And in the end, I was living home when I was in my early 30s. And my employment situation, I always took clerk jobs or something where I could get high on the job, preferably on the premises, and they would just turn the other cheek because they'd say, this guy's intelligent, let's keep him on the job. And I always made it my business to get in because I wanted to get paid. And even when I had a part-time job, I used to sell real estate in my area, but it really was just a place that I could space out and I'd smoke dust and sit there. I'd have guys pick up, you know, reefer here and there and that sort of thing. And that really was my life for a long time, either getting high, thinking about getting high, recuperating from getting high, and that sort of thing. I think a combination of many drugs brought me to a bottom necessary to want recovery, but even then I didn't want it.
But you're talking about something pretty interesting. It's not just about the getting high. It was the planning to get high, the energy behind that, all the other stuff, the mental obsession.
Absolutely.
You know, and how much time, you know, that was taking from you.
Right.
You know, that's a lot, man. You know, like that's the thing that I think a lot of folks don't take into account. They're like, oh, well, you spent a lot of time getting high, but what about the entire other mental obsession that was there before that first joint?
You rarely accomplish anything.
Right.
I mean, I really barely got through situations. I wasn't capable of a relationship with a woman. I wasn't capable of being a good son. I blacked out at two of my siblings' weddings, my head in the wedding cake. I broke a stained glass window on a swinging door in the church. I'd think I was at the local saloon drinking a few. Next thing I'd be on someone's lawn, 4:30 in the morning, four blocks from my house in the pouring rain, missing one of my shoes.
God.
I'd think I'm going to Staten Island. I'd end up at Van Cortlandt Park with my pocket slashed. I rode my bicycle in a knotted out riding my bicycle and cracked my skull on a parked car. A lot of weird happened. Yeah, many times when I finally was driving, I'd say, oh, my God, where's the car? I'd go out, it'd be parked out there, and then the arrogance would come back. Of course, I can drive in a blackout. But driving in a blackout is serious business. I mean, you can kill somebody, you can kill yourself.
But at the time, you really believed you could.
Yeah, I believed that I know it was a blackout, but I've gone through this. I've gotten home a million times or hundreds
DWIs?
Of times. I had one near the end, yes.
You did. What about your drinking?
My drinking was heavy. I drank a fifth a day from age 19 or 20
so
till my mid-30s.
You're an alcoholic as well?
Absolutely, and I'm an AA member in good standing.
You are? Okay. Do you deal with those addictions separately, similarly? What's the difference for
CA
you?
Utilizes the AA Big Book and Step Book, so the program I practice is the same.
Okay.
NA has their own text.
Mm-hmm.
So the CA and AA complement each other. But if I'm going to do Experience, Strength, and Hope in an AA meeting, I really talk mostly about my drinking use.
Sure.
With a small smattering of that I used as other substances.
Where did you first find recovery? Was it in AA or was it in CA or how did it come about?
The first meeting I went to was a CA meeting that I wandered in looking for an AA meeting.
Oh, okay.
And they told me, this is CA. And I said, well, I only use coke a few hundred times in my life. I'm really more of a...
I'm in the wrong place.
I'm really more of a dust pills, Don, tripping smoker. And they said, no, you're welcome, because it's cocaine and all other mind-altering substances. So I was comfortable in CA. They listened to me babble. I had just gotten out of the hospital. And
well, why were you in the hospital?
I had hallucinated and gone crazy in the middle of the street. And my parents called an ambulance, and they took me away to Elmhurst Psych Ward. And the psych ward is where I kind of surrendered for the 15th time, but hopefully for the last. But it has been a long time since that final surrender.
Is that right?
And I'm grateful for that.
All right.
And really, I had, you know, loitered with the intent to recover in meetings for months before that. But this was different that last time.
Yep. My name is Drew, and this is Stepping Out. And hey, if you want to connect with us here at the show, we would love to hear from you. You can visit us online 24 hours a day at www.steppingoutradio.com. While you're there, sign up for our free newsletter. Shoot us an email. We'd love to hear how we're doing. Also, if you want to connect with the Fellowship of Cocaine Anonymous, you could visit them online at www.ca.org. And right off that site, here's a couple other questions I'm going to toss out to the audience. Have any of your friends or family suggested that you might have a problem with coke? Have you ever lied or misled those around you about how much or how often you use? Do you use drugs in your car, at work, in the bathroom, in airplanes, or other public places? Are you afraid that if you stop using cocaine or alcohol, your work will suffer or you'll lose your energy? John, we were talking about, you know, you're hitting your bottom, buddy. I mean, it sounded like talk about that blackout. You're hitting the street and your folks taking you to the hospital.
As long as I had a job and an apartment or lived with my parents or a roof over my head, or I would not want to stop.
Right.
What happened was, in a period of about 3 months, I drove my car into a toll bridge paying a toll. I was arrested for DWI with possession. I committed petty larcenies in broad daylight. I was walking around the street talking to myself. And I was in and out of meetings, but doing nothing, loitering with the intent to recover. Went to a meeting once in a while, never had a sponsor, didn't put up my hand and share, showed up late. Didn't do any service, had no home group, took phone numbers and never used them.
Taking up space.
What happened was the last time after the hospitalization, I heard messages I needed to hear.
Like?
The doctor saying my heart was going to explode, like an aorta explosion, not something they could fix.
Right.
An old gentleman with no teeth coming up to me. I've been in this rehab, this detox, this psycho ward. I've been here so many times, I lost count. Go back to the meetings. They're precious. Now, I didn't have a shirt on that said I go to meetings, but I didn't march out of there with, I'm going to get a sponsor, I'm going to do the big book, I'm going to get to steps in my life, I'm going to do this and that. But something was definitely different. There was a spiritual intervention where the first meeting I was at, I heard a guy say, I got to get a sponsor immediately. My sponsor's busting my chops. And I went over and I said to this guy, I'll promise, I'll call you tonight. I don't know if it was a moment of clarity or godly intervention, but it was the first time I asked for help.
Mm-hmm.
I had been sitting in the meetings for many months and really sporadically at best. I never really accepted step one, surrender. I didn't want to give my life the direction over the care of others and look at what they had to suggest. I wouldn't let group of drug addicts restore me to sanity or group of drunks in AA. I really was just kind of showing up to so I could say, you know, keep the roof over my head and say, yeah, I went to a meeting, but I would be using drinking on that weekend.
Just enough to keep the flamethrower off your
right.
butt. Yeah.
Never avoided people placing things. I sat in the bar, I tried to drink soda. Didn't work.
Yeah.
Guys would come up to me and say, I'm dealing. I got good dust and crack now. You want a cop? I'd say, no. I go to meetings now. But is your beeper still 917-265-3426? So really, there was no commitment to step one. So I got what I got. But
right.
that last time after the psycho ward, when you have a sponsor, it's no longer make a meeting a day. It's I'll see you at certain meeting on a certain day.
Right.
Sponsor insisted I do service.
Yeah.
And we had a big group. 100 people. He said to me, I want you to set up, you know, the room on Saturday morning. Now, I didn't go home knowing what I was going to do. But once again, I woke up without an alarm clock at 6:30 in the morning. And
wow.
It was a 10 o'clock meeting. So I went down there. That was the best thing that ever happened in my life. My esteem grew from doing something from start to finish. I had also, during the period with my DWI and petty larceny, I finally had a hard time staying employed. I was fired probably 12 times in a year.
Wow.
So really, to do something from start to finish was something I needed to do. Just to lay down esteem that I had some function or use or that I could do something, you know, and also get meeting people before the meeting. It was no longer I share something in the meeting and they give me input afterward. It was I made friends there. I realized people like the Yankees, the Mets, went to a movie, voted for so-and-so, whatever it might be. I started to get to know people as humans other than mm-hmm. what the terminologies they were sharing in the meeting. Setting up the room for 6 months was the best thing I ever did in my life. And then it paralleled. It came into other areas of my life. Like other people would come into recovery and I'd continue to set up the room and show them how to set up the room. And then, like it said in step 12, an experience you don't want to miss, watching these people get better a day at a time was really valuable in my life and reminded me that I'm getting better because I'm watching it before my eyes.
Brings up an interesting question. Was it difficult for you to see the your own recovery, you know, rather than, I mean, it's easy to see, I guess, in others when you're looking, but looking at yourself, was that really the benchmark, watching other people get well?
No, to some extent, I felt a difference.
You
I
did.
Knew when I went to a meeting a day, shared, called a sponsor, read the books, prayed and meditated, implemented the steps. I wasn't using. I wasn't drinking anymore. The
mm-hmm.
desire had been lifted after a while, and I was feeling it in other areas.
How long did it take for that desire to be lifted?
For me, it took a few months.
Did it
really wasn't a long, excruciating process. I had also done it the wrong way for 6-7 months prior to that, so I knew what wasn't going to work.
Right.
And I also, my back was against the wall. I was on probation. I didn't want to give dirty urines. My dad is a disciplinarian. Now, while I was 35 living at home, you would say, why is your dad coming to the factor? But I didn't really have the ability to work because I was like my dust use had gotten me so frazzled. So to have that 6 months to a year where I didn't have to worry about that was valuable. And
sure.
I'm grateful for family. And, you know, and starting to, you know, going into a meeting, just setting up the room from start to finish, I then could go to a job and just do the work from start to finish. I didn't worry so much about give me more money or figure out a way to cut corners. It really, the legwork I learned in early fellowship and the tools and the basics of a beginner that you, I even use to this day 13 years later, I could apply in areas of my life like work and other stuff. I became a better son, a better brother, a better, you know, a dependable neighbor. And as the steps got in my life, I noticed a spiritual change where I no longer, you know, I realized that group of drug addicts was restoring to sanity, but I had to put my will in the care of a loving God and realize all this stuff happened for a reason and that I hit a bottom necessary and God's will was to get me in recovery. So I had to be grateful that I stayed alive through the whole stretch of a few times where I, you know, blacked out and woke up. I was laying in the street in a suit and tie. I could have got run over.
Sure.
Who knows what might have happened.
Now, so, when you're talking about God, you know, keeping it as open as we can, we, having had multiple fellowships in here, generally speaking, they say that it's a God of your understanding. So what, you know, you kind
Absolutely.
Of invent your own God. Is that right?
Absolutely. To some extent.
Yeah. I mean,
yes.
It's not really like a, it doesn't have to be a Judeo-Christian God. It doesn't
right.
have to be anything of that sense. It's something that you can figure
That's
out all on your own, right?
It's a spiritual program.
How hard was
religious.
That for you?
Well, I eventually went back to the God of my youth.
Okay.
And found that it paralleled. In the big book of AA, it tells us, you know, look to people of religion for guidance.
Right.
They have a lot to offer. So I saw as I, you know, while I didn't believe in all the man-made, you know, circumstances surrounding organized religion, I slowly was basically able to incorporate back in. And really, step 4 and 5 did a lot for me.
What's it like now?
What's it like now?
What's
well,
your life
you know,
like today?
I'm a functioning person. I work. I do well in my field. I'm a dependable son. I'm involved in fellowship to this day in a lot of areas, like on the world level. I'm the CA World Delegate. I also, in AA, I'm involved with Southeast New York CINI. I've chaired New York Intergroup Bill W. Dinner.
That's
spoken
fantastic.
At that event as well. And it's carried over in my job. I'm dependable. I can open clients. I can deal with Merrill Lynch or other clients one-on-one and not feel like I'm less than. I don't feel better than or less than. I can stay neutral around drugs and alcohol. I go where I have to go. I'm spiritually fit. I hand it back to other people. I pray for guidance every day. I pray for humility. And try to stay, you know, in the solution to the best of my ability. I work with others. I stay out of my own way and continue to incorporate the steps and make that spiritual connection every day with the God of my understanding and also with people in recovery on a daily basis.
Absolutely, John. Thank you so much for being with us. Okay, one more time. If you or someone you love is having a problem with alcohol or drugs, help is available. Call 1-800-ALCOHOL. That's 1-800-252-6465. You're listening to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew. This is Stepping Out.